Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and let's talk about getting a job. So you put on your best shirt, maybe even a tie, comb your hair, polish your shoes, print out your resume on the fanciest paper you can find, show up 15 minutes early for your job interview and give a firm handshake, and the first question you get asked is, so how would you weigh your own head? William Poundstone is the author of a new book, Are You Smart Enough to Work at Google?, which looks at the world of the modern job interview at places like Google and other forward-looking companies. You're likely to get problem solvers and brain teasers there instead of the usual, what's your biggest weakness? William, welcome back to WNYC.
Yes, good to be with you.
And there's a possibly apocryphal story here at WNYC about our very own John Schaefer, host of Soundcheck and New Sounds. The story goes that he hired somebody about 20 years ago, and the job interview consisted of two questions. Do you play softball, and what position? I guess those days are long gone.
Yeah, kind of, although I think that was probably an attempt to find out whether you'd be a good fit in the particular corporate culture. And you still encounter questions sort of like that now. I mean, there are companies that ask, do you like Coke or Pepsi? Do you like the Beatles or the Rolling Stones? So I guess, you know, that hasn't completely left the interviewing picture.
What does it tell them if you like the Beatles versus the Rolling Stones or vice versa?
I was told the guy who uses this, it's a music publishing company out in California, that you're expected to answer the Beatles. If you say that, then you'll fit in. Rolling Stones, you won't. So.
And if you said the Kinks, then the interview ends right there, right?
I think it would.
And you highlight one particular strand of interview question in the book, the how many X are there in Y question. How many piano tuners are there in Chicago? How many bottles of shampoo are manufactured every year? Why do they ask this at a place like Google?
Yeah, it's really, they have this idea that you should be able to estimate anything. These are called Fermi questions, named after the physicist Enrico Fermi, who used to kind of terrorize his physics classes with that. But it shows how much things have changed, that what used to be something that, you know, PhD candidates in physics were expected to do is now something that, you know, applicants at banks, consulting firms, technology firms are expected to do. You'll get something like, how much toilet paper would it take to cover the entire state of Texas? And the interviewer who asked that really doesn't know the answer. They just want to see your thought process. The only thing I can say in consolation is that if you do get the job, you won't be required to do things like that.
So how do you weigh your head?
Well, that's a really tough one. That one I actually traced back to Cambridge and Oxford, where they're famous for these very tough admission interviews. That's one of the questions they ask. And lately, that has crossed the Atlantic to a lot of the big investment banks and consulting firms. There's no entirely slam-dunk answer to that. What most really good people think of is the Archimedes principle, that if you will dunk your head in a basin of water filled to the brim and collect the water that spills over, well, obviously that water is going to have the same volume as your head. Now, unfortunately, it's asking for the weight, not volume. But you can figure that the average density of the human body is just about the same as water because, you know, we just barely float in a swimming pool. So for at least a first-order approximation, the weight of the water that spills out in a head dunk is going to be pretty close to the weight of your head. But if you're answering that way, I mean, it is good to show that you realize that's an approximation. It's not an exact answer. And the real challenge is, can you make that better? So they really ask questions that don't necessarily have a pat answer because they figure, you know, that's really the type of questions we deal with in life. You know, if you're inventing a new business plan or a new product, there's no one to tell you that this has a really cute trick answer, and if you just look for it, you'll find it. You really don't know when you know, an answer is good enough, and that's one of the things they want to sort of introduce into the interview process.
William Poundstone, my guest, author of the new book, Are You Smart Enough to Work at Google?, which looks at the world of the modern job interview. Alan in Poughkeepsie, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi there. I've been hearing a lot about this book recently, mostly from Googlers that I know who say they've never gotten interview questions like this. And a lot of people who are part of Google's process saying that Google has been actively trying to stamp out asking questions like this. This sounds a lot more like stories that we were hearing 15 years ago that Microsoft was asking questions like this. So is this really something new? Did you just use this on the title to sound good, or what?
No, it's definitely this has been a type of interview question they have in the tech industry for many years, and Google has really done everything they can to avoid, you know, having people ask these tricky questions. But it's definitely something they still do ask. One of the things, if you look on the website Glassdoor.com, people will report, you know, the various types of interview questions they get. And they're still asked at Google, and they've certainly spread virally from the technology field to all sorts of other types of companies.
Well, Alan, I'm really glad you called in because, William, I guess it's only fair to point out that you've just acknowledged that you've released a book called Are You Smart Enough to Work at Google? Based on Google and other tech companies' interview questions, but you said Google does everything it can to avoid questions like this these days, yes?
Yes, but they still are asked, and certainly they do ask the sort of very tough estimation questions, which is sort of form the template for a lot of these interviews.
Why would they be controversial internally?
It's really that they just try to keep as close to the sort of things that you actually deal with in the actual work process. So a lot of these basically go into algorithms. How would you do something?
So do you think did they come to the conclusion that these sorts of questions just leave too much out? Like it does really not answer, you know, to your ability to answer a logic problem, or tell me if you're a nice person, or if you work well as part of a team? Is it just that there's too much lost in spending valuable interview time on these kinds of questions?
Well, I mean, most of their questions are what they call work sampling, where they try to pose a very difficult question of an algorithm or a coding problem. Or if you're applying for, say, an attorney, they will ask you, how would you make up a contract, a very difficult contract, like one of the classic ones. They ask, you know, suppose I wanted to sell my soul to the devil. How would you write the contract for that? So, you know, they really want to look at your thought process about mm-hmm. how you deal with something that's a little different from what you've dealt with in school. Something where you're really kind of starting from scratch and have to decide how would you deal with this novel situation.
And your book is chock full of these examples. Another one is, it's raining and you have to get to your car at the far end of the parking lot. Are you better off walking to your car or running if the goal is to minimize how wet you get? And does this change if you have an umbrella?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
What are they looking for there?
With that, again, it's your logic process. There's no single answer, and it does matter whether you have an umbrella. If you've got an umbrella and if it's big enough, you're actually better walking slowly. But if you don't have an umbrella, you want to run as fast as you can.
Patrice in Westchester, you have an interview question that you were asked?
Yes, I was asked, when I sail, who takes the tiller, my husband or myself?
What was the answer?
The answer was a deflection, and it was, of course, we talk about it.
What were they looking for?
I was applying, I worked for this company for 10 years. I was the assistant general counsel in a multinational corporation, and I think that the president of this company was looking to see whether or not he could push me around, and if I thought of myself as the alpha or not.
Did he want to be able to push you around or not want to be able to push you around?
He absolutely wanted to be able to push me around.
So that must have raised a red flag about the culture of the place.
Yeah. I mean, it raised the red flag, and it became, I realized after we had a conversation starting with that, that he had a great sense of humor, and we worked backwards and had, it was very funny conversation thereafter, because really it was, why are you asking? After I got a little more comfortable later on in the interview, I'm like, you know, why did you ask me that question, and what were you looking for me, and what are you looking in for in a someone to counsel you, and how do you see my job in terms of getting your business needs met but protecting you legally? Mm-hmm. So he's a great guy, and but it was a little bit of he told me about 5 years later that he had another interviewer who was also a woman in a very male-dominated business that this is, and that she also apparently failed, because he had failing stuff all over his office, and he failed, and she said defiantly, I take the tiller, and he didn't like her.
Mm. Patrice, thank you very much. At least he let you talk back to him by asking why he asked that question. M on our comments page writes, a friend went for a construction job. The interview is this. They lined up 5 shovels and asked him to take his pick. Very confusing. Giannis in New Jersey, you're on WNYC. Hello, Giannis.
Yeah, hi, Brian. Well, my daughter works for Google, and I don't think she was asked any tricky questions. The problem is that the interview was very thorough. I think she went through 8 individual interviews with 8 different people. And, you know, they talked about her qualifications, and they made a decision on whether to hire her or not. So I guess she was smart enough. She's still there.
What kind of a job was it? Or is it?
This is for internal communications.
Giannis, thank you very much. Do you have a favorite question from your own book, William?
It's kind of tough. I think one of them may be, can you swim faster in water or syrup? That one actually has its origin a few years back. You know, they have these Ig Nobel Prizes for kind of crazy scientific work.
Right.
And there was actually an experiment they did on that at the University of Minnesota. But it's lately become something that they're asking in job interviews. The answer actually turns out to be that there's no demonstrable difference between water or syrup.
Really?
But obviously you're not expected to know that. They want to see, like, what sort of explanation you can give, if you can explain, you know, a good rationale of why you think that it would be one or the other, or whether probably the best answer is to say that, you know, you'd really need an experiment to determine this and go into that. But again, it's something where they really put you on the spot and just want to see what you say.
And I'll avoid trying to think about the answer to the question that you write, the consulting firm Accenture asks, which is, how do you put a giraffe in a refrigerator? So we will leave it there with William Poundstone, author of the new book, Are You Smart Enough to Work at Google?, which looks at the world of the modern job interview. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.